The Honorable Chief Justice and Justices of the Supreme Court of Ohio. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio is now in open session pursuant to adjournment.
You may be seated. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. We are here this morning for our first case, 13-935, L.J. Smith Incorporated versus Harrison County Board of Revision, the County Auditor, and Conocton Valley Union Local School District Board of Education. For the appellant, Mr. Ludham.
May it please the court. My name is Kevin Lindholm, and I'm here on behalf of the appellant, L.J. Smith. I would like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Proceed.
Thank you. This is a rather narrow and unusual issue that's before the court. Normally, in an argument of this type, I would probably just kind of gloss over the facts and say, well, here's my spellbinding legal argument. But here we have a situation that is rather fact-intensive. The singular proposition of law is that my client has been denied the right to proceed with a complaint against the valuation of real estate due to irregularities in the handling of that complaint by the county auditor and the Board of Revision. What I believe happened in this case is that a complaint along with an appraisal summary was sent to the county auditor's office. I don't think that it got file stamped in. I think it got placed in a file and set aside.
You have a time stamped copy?
I do not believe that a time stamped copy exists.
How can you verify it had been filed?
Well, you have to do a little bit of piecework here, I guess, and it comes down, Your Honor, to some facts that we do know and then applying some common sense and some logic to those. Opposing counsel has tried to steer the court towards a body of case law that would suggest, you know, it's not the date of mailing, it's the date of filing. And there's several cases where the deadline of the end of March, it got mailed before it got received in April, and those cases get bounced. Here, the mailing took place in March, I think 18th or 19th, and there's no allegation that it was received untimely. What we have is a situation where there were two complaints filed. One had to do with the property that's the subject of this appeal, which is kind of my client's main manufacturing facility. The other complaint had to do with a parcel of land that was subsequently sold. If you follow the affidavit of Amy Guy, it sets forth a timeline of how things proceeded. And what happened was there were discussions with the auditor's office about the other parcel that eventually was sold. So that was kind of removed from the mix. In October, there were discussions with the auditor about the property at issue here. What the auditor did was he never scheduled it for a hearing. He didn't give notice to the Board of Education for Conocton Valley.
Counsel, may I ask a question?
Sure.
It seems to me you're asking this court to weigh competing affidavits, are you not? On the one hand, you've got the county auditor who says, never happened.
Well, you have a county auditor that says it was never filed. You don't have a county auditor that says, well, it was never received. You don't even have counsel for the county saying it was never received. They just say a file stamp copy doesn't exist.
But isn't this the same weighing exercise that was attempted at the Board of Tax Appeals and unsuccessfully?
Well, I think what they did there, and the reason why it was unsuccessful, Your Honor, was they misapplied a basic tenet of the law.
Which is?
Well, there's a body of law that says there's this presumption that arises that county officials are going to do things the right way. They're going to be done properly, orderly, in accordance with the law. But it's prefaced with an absence of evidence to the contrary. And this case, in my opinion, is replete with evidence to the contrary.
If you'll accept my suggestion that the weighing happened at the Board of Tax Appeals, what therefore is the standard of review at this, the second level?
Well, I think it's a statutory level of review. It's 5717.04, where it is a unreasonable or unlawful type of examination.
So we're not weighing, are we?
Well, I think you are, in the sense that you have to figure out whether this was reasonable or not.
But aren't we bound by the facts as determined that there was no file stamped copy?
Well,
we have loads of lawyers who file appeals here, and if we don't have a file stamped copy, we say, well, we really appreciate that you mailed it, but it never came here and it never got filed here. Isn't that kind of the same thing that happened in your instance?
One distinction. There's never been an allegation that it was not received. It's only been, there's a parsing of words here where it was not filed. If you look at the appellate brief.
But there's no evidence that the auditor received it and failed to file it, is there?
Well.
There's no affidavit to that. You want us to infer that.
Well, I think that's the only thing you can infer from these
counsel,
facts.
Was it in the file? Is there a copy of the complaint in the file?
The Harrison County auditor did not submit a copy of the file at the Board of Tax Appeals request.
So
that was asked for but not submitted.
Asked for by whom?
By the Board of Tax Appeals.
And they did not submit a copy of the complaint. The complaint that you say came to them inside of their office, they opened it, they took a look at it, they failed to timestamp it, and well, it is now nowhere to be found inside the auditor's office. Is that a fair statement?
Somewhat. Let me see if I can maybe respond to what we're trying to infer and what we know and what we don't know. We know that in the record, the representative of my client mailed the complaint. We know.
How do we know that?
From her affidavit.
Okay, so that's the only way we know it. She doesn't have a receipt. It wasn't certified. It was just mailed, regular U.S. mail.
It was not certified. It was regular U.S. mail.
Okay.
We also know from her affidavit that it was not returned. Okay. We also know from what subsequently happened that it was acted upon by the auditor's office.
It was what?
Acted upon by the auditor's office. There was a meeting set up of the representative of L.J. Smith, the Conotton Valley School District Treasurer, opposing counsel was there, and they had sort of a powwow, if you will, about how can we get this.
That meeting was triggered by the receipt of the complaint to reduce the value.
Well, I don't know what else it could have been triggered by. There's been some suggestion that perhaps my client just asked for an informal review. There isn't any evidence in any of the sworn matters before the court that occurred.
What did your client say?
My client says that she sent it in, it was not returned, that she had in the meantime some discussions about this other parcel that was sold. She discussed the...
She had some discussions with whom?
The auditor.
And who initiated those discussions?
I believe that she did.
So she picked up the telephone to call the auditor.
Yeah, I think she had a question about, since that property was going to be sold, would the sales price be the determining value?
Going to the affidavit of Ms. Guy, the CFO, did her affidavit actually attach a copy of the complaint?
that
she showed, did she in her affidavit say, this is the complaint that I sent?
That is attached to one of the affidavits, Your Honor. It's properly authenticated. I think in her longer version, it was the cover letter. In an earlier pleading we had filed, there was the complaint itself along with the summary of the appraisal that was done.
That was my confusion here, whether she just sent a letter saying, I filed it, and there was no complaint attached, which might have been just the letter sent without the complaint.
I think in the file it might appear in separate places, but that was just the way things were briefed, not the way things were mailed. What she mailed was a cover letter, complaint, and a summary of the real estate valuation by our expert witness.
And the only evidence of that is her statement that this is what she did.
Correct. Yeah. Oh, I mean, there's a dated letter and a filled out complaint on the proper statutory form. You got to believe that she did indeed mail it. And I don't know that anybody is really capable of refuting that. The thing that doesn't add up is, how did this get acted upon if that hadn't been the triggering event? And further, there was ultimately a Board of Revision determination that was a final appealable order. And, it's not until 2 years into the appeal that we get a two-paragraph affidavit from the auditor going, oops, this was never filed in the first place. It's at times sort of surreal. But I think the body of law that the Board of Tax Appeals relied upon, which is, county officials are presumed to do things properly, again, is prefaced with the idea, absent any evidence to the contrary.
Isn't it normal, though, to get a file-stamped copy of a complaint that's filed and retain it for your own records?
Well, this was done without the assistance of counsel. This was done by L.J. Smith on their own. Certainly, when I file something, you send the extra copy, you get a file stamp back for it. She didn't do that. She just mailed it. But again, as I said, it was acted upon. I mean, there was a meeting, and ultimately there was a determination.
But the question that I asked you, because you said that there was a meeting, but you also said that she picked up the telephone to call the auditor to inquire about the parcel of land that was up for sale.
Correct.
So while she's talking to the auditor about the parcel of land, she did not talk about the manufacturing facility and say, by the way, we'd like to sit down and have a meeting over the valuation of this property?
She did not request a meeting over this. That was the auditor's idea, Your Honor.
But did it happen during that telephone call?
I don't believe so. I think if you look at the affidavit, I think that the actual discussions with the auditor's office about that other parcel that got sold, I don't know that that was directly with the auditor. I think that was with some of the auditor's staff people. I think the first conversation she had directly with the auditor was in October, when he had indicated his plan to get together for a meeting. And I'm certainly
but,
not.
But the normal course is not to have an informal meeting with the school board and your client. So that's an unusual circumstance. You'd admit that.
It's highly unusual.
So this wasn't acting pursuant to a complaint that had been filed. This was pursuant to informal meeting that someone arranged that we don't know who.
The auditor.
Because the facts aren't clear.
The auditor arranged it. I think the affidavit is clear on that this was at the auditor's behest. The informality.
The auditor doesn't normally arrange informal meetings. The auditor would assess the valuation and send it to the Board of Revision. Wouldn't that be the normal circumstance?
The auditor would normally ensure that a hearing is scheduled within the statutory time period. The auditor would send.
Well, where is
the
legislative prerogative
party
to conduct an informal hearing or informal proceeding or meeting?
I think he was off the map a little bit there.
Why do you think he did that?
All right. Admittedly, this is just speculation and knowledge of Harrison County. I think it's a small, informal sort of place. I don't know the auditor personally to try to figure out why he did that, but I mean,
what you're saying is that he
doesn't know the formal procedure.
All right, the auditor receives a complaint, and he says, rather than follow the statute on what I'm supposed to do now that I've got this formal complaint, I'm just going to pick up the telephone. The formal complaint was March of 2010, and the auditor and your client met when?
They eventually met in November of that year.
November. So from March to November, he says, I'm just going to pick up the telephone and we're going to set up a meeting to talk about this.
It's unfortunate that we don't have more detail from the auditor. It's unfortunate that the auditor's counsel has waived oral argument to respond to some of this stuff. I mean, getting inside his mind as best I can, I think it's a combination of the way things work in a small county, the way things may work when you don't understand the procedure that you're supposed to follow. It didn't do, any of the normal steps that you would expect. And, my point is that because of these irregularities in the way things were handled, my client is the one that has to pay the price, and fundamentally that's not fair.
But it was your client who didn't file and get a time-stamped copy of this.
She was ignorant
of
that procedure.
Origination of how this got off track.
She was ignorant of that procedure, Your Honor.
This doesn't normally occur very much. There's not much precedential value to this kind of a case. This is so unique.
It is. I don't think if
we're
I
not
had to
fact c- finders. Boards of revision are fact finders, or the BTA are
well. Fact-finders. And I think that the facts do need to be found out, and the way to do that is to remand it back to square one and have the hearing that was never scheduled.
Thank you.
Because I don't think you can just apply the precedent that the Board of Tax Appeals did here. Like, if you're a public official, you do things right. There's that presumption, and ignore, what the condition is on that it's like absent anything to the contrary. And there's a bunch of stuff here that, shows he did not follow the procedure that they're presuming he did. I mean, that's uncontroverted.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Holmes.
Chief Justice O'Connor, may it please the court. My name is Thomas Holmes. I'm the attorney for Pelley Conotton Valley Union Local School District Board of Education. The sole issue before this court today is whether the Ohio Board of Tax Appeals abused its discretion in determining that the appellant did not file the purported valuation complaint in accordance with sections 5715.13 and 5715.19 of the Ohio Revised Code.
Where is that finding made?
I apologize.
Where is that finding made?
The Ohio Board of Tax Appeals decision is...
It's in their decision?
Correct. It is... I will get the exact cite for you on this. Yeah, the decision of the Ohio Board of Tax Appeals is attached to the merit brief of the Board of Education.
In your representation, is there's a specific finding that this was not filed?
By the Board of Tax Appeals, correct.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, that's attached. That decision of the Board of Tax Appeals is attached to the appendix of the merit brief of the Board of Education, pages A1 through A.
Thank you.
A5. My apologies. It's well established by this court that a decision of the board, an appeal from the Board of Tax Appeals, is reviewed under an abuse of discretion standard. In EOP BP Tower LLC v. Cuyahoga County Board of Revision, which is cited on page 5 and 6 of the Board of Education's merit brief. This court held that an abuse of discretion connotates more than just an error of law or judgment. Rather, to prove an abuse of discretion, the appellant must show, quote, that the BTA's attitude was unreasonable, arbitrary, or unconscionable.
A generous understanding of Mr. Lundholm's position would be that it was mailed to the county auditor and the auditor failed to file it, but subsequently conducted an informal meeting and resolved the issue.
That is correct.
How should we deal with that argument? Because apparently the meeting did occur in November, and apparently there was some document in a file purportedly submitted by Ms. Guy of L.J. Smith asking for a reduction.
Correct.
And apparently, inferentially, I think Mr. Lundholm is arguing it was the auditor who failed to take it over and timestamp it.
Correct. The Board of Education would stipulate to all those facts except for the fact that the auditor received it and failed to timestamp it.
Is it not in the auditor's file?
The auditor did not have a copy of this, according to my understanding. I do not represent.
How would the auditor know to conduct a meeting on the valuation of the property if it didn't have a copy of the complaint asking for a reduction?
That I do not know. I received a telephone call from him in the fall of 2012 asking to schedule an informal meeting to discuss the reducing the value of the property.
But to your knowledge, there is no document in the auditor's file which would purport to be a complaint seeking reduction of the property valuation.
That is correct. The first time I saw a complaint was pursuant to discovery request at the BTA level.
It seems as though the opinion, first of all, says that there was the failure of proof. And then the conclusion is, therefore, a presumption of regularity suggests that that was the reason for the decision. The regularity was that the auditor had acted appropriately. Would you agree that the failure of if the board found the failure of proof of the complaint, that would be sufficient to uphold the decision? Do we even need to get into this presumption of regularity?
I don't believe we do. I think it's a matter of, did the appellant file the complaint with the county auditor's office? And quite honestly, there's nothing in the record that establishes that. At most, the appellant is able to establish that a complaint was prepared, either attempted to be mailed or in fact mailed, and that's it.
Well, no, they do say that the subsequent informal meeting was precipitated by the receipt of the complaint, and their statement is that the affiant, when I asked the question of your opposing counsel, was that she merely called to talk about the tract of land, not the manufacturing facility. So, you know, what would have precipitated the informal meeting that took place in October had it not been triggered by the complaint? That's their position.
Correct. And there is no evidence in the record establishing what precipitated having that meeting.
But there is the response by the auditor that admits that they employed an informal approach here.
Correct.
What do you think they mean by informal approach?
My assumption on that would be they held a meeting with the attempt to reach a settlement prior to reaching some sort of decision as a reduction in value.
Okay, and you were part of that meeting,
that
correct?
Is correct.
And so they had an informal discussion with the interested parties. And then they came up with a valuation of, I don't know, I guess they reduced to from $44,500,000 and some to $3,400,000 and some. So they took off about $1 million.
Correct.
Right? And that wasn't satisfactory to L.J. Smith Incorporated.
Correct.
At that informal meeting, was there an agreement that they were going to take off $1 million, or did it just at the end the auditor said, okay, L.J. Smith, what I'm going to do for you is reduce it by $1 million, and you're going to get an order to that effect?
No, there was no agreement at the meeting. The representative L.J. Smith indicated she needed to go back to talk with some people for settlement authority. I had to do the same with my Board of Education. 2-3 months later, out of the blue, we received this final appealable order from the Board of Revision, reducing the value of the property. There was no agreement as to the reduction in value.
Normally, what would have happened before you received an order from the Board of Revision?
Well, normally the complaint has to be filed with the Board of Revision by March 31st of the tax year.
Right.
A notice is sent to the property owner and the Board of Education to schedule a hearing.
Counsel, isn't that a requirement for the Board of Revision to even have jurisdiction?
The filing of a complaint?
Absolutely. Do they have any authority to even have an informal discussion on property valuation absent a complaint?
I don't believe so. The auditor has the authority under statute to reduce or increase the value of real estate. Oftentimes, they like to get the stakeholders in a room to see if they could reach some sort of an agreement as to value to avoid any appeals of that.
The bottom line is Board of Revision doesn't have jurisdiction until a complaint is filed, correct?
That is correct. The Board of Revision does not have jurisdiction. The county auditor.
And I'm reading from the Board of Tax Appeals that we're appealing today. We conclude that they failed to file a complaint.
That's correct.
Isn't that the end of this case?
That's correct. As far as, hey, did the Board of Tax Appeals abuse its discretion? Its decision is clear that it weighed all the evidence, both in support of and against the filing of the purported complaint. It considered the affidavit of L.J. Smith's representative where she attested that she mailed the complaint. It considered the affidavit of the county auditor who attested that the complaint was never filed with his office, and it considered the fact that no timestamp copy of the complaint existed.
So it seems that we're talking about settled law here, correct? Is there anything that we need to write on this case?
I don't believe so. I think it's purely, did the Board of Tax Appeals abuse its discretion in determining that the complaint was not filed? As far as the appellant's assertion that the affidavit of the county auditor states filed rather than mailed, I believe ignores the Supreme Court's finding or ruling in the Fulton case, which is cited on page 7 of the Board of Education's merit brief, that defines filing as actual receipt. The fact that the auditor stated never filed it does, in fact, under that court's ruling, or this court's ruling in Fulton, determine that it did not receive the complaint. So that's kind of irrelevant. I also would like to point out, because the appellant raises it in its reply brief, that there's no evidence whatsoever that the county auditor mishandled or otherwise neglected to perform any of his statutory duties. There's no evidence of that. The only evidence that has been presented by the appellant is that a complaint may have been prepared, it may have been mailed, and that's it. And that is not enough to invoke the jurisdiction of the Board of Revision, and I believe the Board of Tax Appeals correctly determined that, and therefore would request that the Board of Tax Appeals decision be affirmed. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Lundholm, you've used all your time. You may take 30 seconds.
Thank you. I think the important thing here in this case is to look at page 4 of the Board of Tax Appeals opinion. And Justice Lanziger, this may address your concern about a failure of proof. Certainly the Amy Guy affidavit was before them.
as well as the affidavit of the auditor. Mm-hmm. They didn't weigh it. They didn't have some big deliberation. They basically said, we believe the public official because of this court's case law that says in the absence of something to the contrary, that's what you do. There was not any sort of weighing in their decision, and that's very clear. It just says that they believe that Ms. Guy and Mr. Moore both were telling the truth as they believed it to be. And then they say, however, you know, we're going to go with the public official because of the body of law.
I think isn't it a burden of proof, though, that the party that has the burden of proof must persuade more than if things are equal, then the party who has the burden of proof is not satisfied it. Isn't that correct?
I agree with that assumption. But here it wasn't a weighing. It was, if you read it, it just goes right on to cite the rule that says, since he's a public official, we go with him. Now, I believe in the veracity of public officials, but, you know, this is a situation where they didn't weigh it. They just said, because of this law that says we assume regularity, we're going to go with this guy.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We will take the matter under advisement, and you'll be notified of our decision.